Welcome to Do Nothing But Read, the podcast book club, episode 28. This book is property of Severus Snape. In this volume, we talk about terrible fonts, the correct pronunciation of Neanderthal, and Bob Dylan's ghostwriter. From King Gillette, Wisconsin, I'm Amanda.
And from the home of Kelly Ripa, New Jersey, I'm Brandon. I had to do that because we just announced he's retiring.
I know, which is it, I feel like he's like 97 years old.
He's been on TV since 1961.
Holy bananas.
Oh, welcome back to Do Nothing But Read, Amanda.
Yes, it's been welcome a long back break. To you, and happy birthday this past week.
Yes, thank you very much. lots of things happened since Christmas break.
I know, we haven't chatted in a while.
No, we did our favorite books last episode, so Check those out if you didn't get to see those. I'm not going to say I was surprised, but it was a good pick for yours.
Thank you.
I know you talked so highly of that book, so I kind of felt fantastic. That was coming.
Yeah. Well, I thought that it was interesting that we both chose nonfiction.
Yes. I found that highly interesting that we both chose nonfiction.
Yeah. Like, does that say something about us or about the choices of books in 2010?
I just think it's more of the choices of books in 2010. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was a lot of good fiction this year last year.
I tend to agree with. I mean, there's a lot of great young adult stuff, but I mean that the Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks was the best book that I've read in the past several years. So, yeah.
I think that there's been a lack of high quality fiction.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
But there's been some phenomenal nonfiction, so it's making up for it.
Yeah, so. And today we're actually talking about more nonfiction.
Yes.
So let's get started.
So, class, turn to page 42. We're going to be talking about the reading last night. I assume all of you did the reading last night.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. And it's on page 42, so it's The Meaning of Life.
Of course, Amanda, you would just blurt that out in the middle of class.
I know.
You were that kid who would sit up front and like, yes, yes, sir, we did read. We did read everything last night. So we're going to be talking about textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And some textbooks you sell back, but some textbooks you keep.
Right.
And so we're each going to be talking about a textbook that we kept that we still go back and read to this day.
Yep.
And textbooks they're like camp friends where you're thrown together and some of them you hate forever. But you're really nice to them at the time and you try your best to be friends with them. And but then some of them you befriend on Facebook and you talk to this day.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's kind of something you're thrust into reading and you just kind of have to make the best of it.
Right. And I sometimes think that reading, like required reading, is sometimes turns into, I would rather stab myself in the eye with a pen than actually continue to read this book. But then if I read someone else's book that's not required but might be just as dry or as unfun as the book that I'm reading, and it'll be more interesting to me because I won't have to read it. Like when I was little, I had a couple friends like from church who went to a different school, and like sometimes we'd get together and like study because we were nerds like that. And like they had different textbooks than us. And it was so weird looking through their textbooks. It was like the same material, but it was a completely different presentation of it. And, you know, the pictures were different and the cover was different. And it was weird knowing that other kids in other schools use different books. And I liked looking through their textbooks and it was fun. And I think that we could be sneaky with kids getting them to read textbooks. We could like assign them one textbook. Like, this is the one you have to read, but then like provide some other books just around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and be like, oh, hey, look at this book. You don't have to read it if you don't want to. And then maybe they'll read it because it's not assigned.
Yeah, I don't think I had real relationships with textbooks like you did until college when the textbooks seemed to become, they were still textbooks, but they became more to my interests.
Well, and then when you're in college, you own your textbooks, which I think was a completely different experience than just borrowing them because you could write in them. And the first time I ever wrote in a textbook that I owned, like, I felt so naughty. It was weird.
Because you weren't allowed to do that.
No.
But I did miss one thing in that you could see what like when you got the textbooks in public school, you mm-hmm. could see what people had the textbook before you.
Yeah.
And I always found that really interesting to see, like, what people I, like, if I knew the person mm-hmm. or if, that had the textbook before me.
Or if it was, like, someone's older brother or something.
Yeah, or it could be your parents' sort of friend mm-hmm. who is now a teacher, and he writes all of these little tips
mm-hmm.
About how to mix potions correctly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And you only later find out that it's the teacher.
Yeah, he's very helpful.
He's very helpful.
No, he seems like a jerk, but he's actually helpful.
He's very helpful. but yeah, it is sort of something magical in... Oh my God, I said magical with a Harry Potter reference. But it is something sort of magical about that kind of thing where the books kept being... They're handed down and handed mm-hmm. down. And I didn't really sort of feel kind of cool about it until my brother, who was 3 years younger than me,
mm-hmm.
he started to get textbooks from people, like my friends.
Oh, that's so cool.
You know, like when he'd like, oh, look, I got such and such's textbook. I was like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. He carried that textbook around all yeah. year. And now you're going to carry it around all year.
And, see, that's the whole history of book ownership.
Yes.
That, you know, like you can just borrow or own something for a while that someone else owned or borrowed and had their own life experiences with.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
What book did you have to hold on to from
your schooling? I actually have quite a few of my textbooks because I really mm-hmm. hate parting with books.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of them. But I have a degree in anthropology. That was my BA. And so I have a lot of anthropology books. And now that I'm a librarian, I actually cataloged all of my books that I own at home, my home library.
Really?
And yeah. With stickers and everything. They're stickers.
Do you put cards in them? And
I don't, but I did lend a few out. Stamp
them.
I did like write down like in an Excel spreadsheet like who had them and what date they took them out and then what date they came back mm-hmm. and I did like put a little like bookmark in them with my name and stuff.
I can see you someone coming to your room. Oh, you have to read this book. One moment.
Yeah. Stamp.
Here you go.
That's such the noise that it makes too. Yeah. So but I have a lot of anthropology books, and when I cataloged my books, it was like all like my nonfiction is mostly anthropology. And I started out as political science, then I moved to sort of more physical anthropology. And so my junior year of college, I was at the University of Iowa, and I took Introduction to Physical Anthropology. So mm-hmm. the book that I chose to talk about now is called Introduction to Physical Anthropology.
But textbooks often have very unoriginal names.
I know. I wish it was called like Cool Bones and stuff. Like that would be much more interesting.
Yeah.
But it's by Robert Germain, Lynn Kilgore, and Wenda Trevithan. And I ended up specializing in cultural anthropology, but I really do have a soft spot for physical anthropology, especially hominids. Hominoids are the ones that were before hominids, and hominids are the ones that directly are related to Homo sapiens sapiens, which is us.
I'm hip to evolution.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you're hip to evolution. And then also I have a really big soft spot for Neanderthals.
Correctly said, thank you.
I know. When people say Neanderthal, it makes me want to punch them in their stupid thall. So learning where Homo sapiens sapiens comes from, and I say Homo sapiens sapiens because Neanderthals are probably Homo sapiens neanderthalensis. So us, we are Homo sapiens sapiens. And learning where like we come from and where we developed all of our strange, weird, no one else has this specialized traits is mm-hmm. incredibly interesting. And this book, it starts out from like DNA. Like, it, you know, it starts back way, way back there. And then it goes all the way up to now. But it talks about, you know, the prosimians, like lemurs and tarsiers and all those kinds of weird things, like lorises. And then it talks
Loraxes?
About... Loraxes? Well, I wish it was a lorax, but lorises, they have huge eyes. And they're the slow loris. There's a video on YouTube, actually. It's the creepiest thing. This, the way the slow horse, the slow loris hunts
yeah.
is it, like, sneaks up on bugs, but, like, so slowly that, like, it takes them, like, 5 minutes to, like, finally grab the bug. But then once they do it really quickly, So it's like creep, creep for like 5 minutes and then snatch. And it's the scariest thing. So, you know, it's like all about that kind of stuff. But then it gets into what I'm really interested in, which is, you know, like Australopithecus afarensis and Australopithecus ramidus and all that kind of stuff. And there's lots of charts and graphs and pictures, and it's written in a fairly colloquial manner. And, you know, I can see, like, I'm an anthropology nerd, but I can see this book being really fun slash interesting for people who don't really know that much about anthropology or who are interested about knowing, like, where humans come from. And it is an intro book, but it definitely gets into the nitty-gritty of physical anthropology. And so after I took this class, I was determined that I wanted to be a forensic anthropologist, like Bones on that TV show.
Yes.
So I took this class called Human Osteology, and I took it for a week, and then I dropped it because the fourth or fifth day in class, the teacher gave us all a box of bones and told us to identify them.
Oh, that's creepy.
He was like, "These will be your bones for the rest of the semester. Like, you will like identify bones. Who they are and like what, like, you know, deformities and abnormalities they have and like who they came from." These and I was like, bones. "Screw this."
Oh, that's so weird.
I know.
Here's your bones.
And they were human. They were human bones, like from cadavers. It was weird. So I dropped that because I was like, I will fail this.
So yeah, I think you might not have been your calling.
No, but I definitely still love physical anthropology. And anytime that there's like a special on TV about like hominids or, you know, like Lucy or the first Eve or, you know, all that kind of like, where did we come from kind of stuff, I always watch it and then yell at them when they get stuff wrong, because I always do. So
I thought my favorite is the Alec Baldwin one. I love
Oh my God, he's so dramatic.
Yeah, he's so good at it.
Yeah. I love, like, I don't know. There's some real characters too in the world of physical anthropology, because it's almost like, you know how like paleontologists and like dinosaur scientists are all sort of like cowboys.
Yeah, because they all say dinosaur.
Dinosaur. It's sort of the same kind of thing in anthropology, where all the physical anthropologists are sort of like these badass mofos who are like looking at bones in the desert, and then all the cultural guys are like, "I'm going to study these people in North America," and it's like like prim and proper almost.
Yeah.
I'm not a cowboy is the whole gist of this.
Yes.
Well, what book did you choose for yours?
Well, mine's similar. Mine is in my undergrad, and it is a 101 kind of book. Now, my two degrees, one is in graphic design and illustration, the other one's in public relations. I've got a lot of books, and I kept most of them. I kept a lot of them, even a lot of my my non-subject books I kept.
Cause right.
I'm like you, I'd rather not get the 5 to 6 bucks they give you back and keep the book. If they give you 40 or 50, then they can have the book.
Right.
The one I'm going with is one that I think is a great read for anybody. And it's going to sound like something that you would never want to read in your life. And it's called Thinking with Type, and it's by Ellen Lupton. And it was required reading for my typography class. And it's a newer book. It's from 2004. When you think 2004 might not sound that new anymore, but when I read it, was like fresh off the press, and it's still very much relevant. Good design doesn't change.
Right.
It's just how you get to there is a little differently. And I love this book so much. When you open the front cover, the first thing is, typography is what language looks like. So this book is called Thinking with Type, A Critical Guide for Designers, Writers, Editors, and Students. So it's not just for people that are type nerds. It's for people that use letters.
Right.
Everyone uses letters.
Everyone. Yeah.
Everyone uses words. Everyone uses letters. And this shows you how to use them properly and why to use them properly. So if you've ever wondered why designers flip out over Comic Sans or papyrus.
A note about papyrus, the table of contents of my book, Introduction to Physical Anthropology, is in papyrus, just FYI.
That wasn't done by a professional designer, I can tell you that. No. So this book is fantastic. It's a real 101 kind of book. But it manages to make something as seemingly mundane as typography and really makes it interesting and relevant to anybody.
Cool.
And it does that by it starts with covering the history of printing and typesetting. And when you learn where letters come from and where actual typefaces come from, you start to understand why they exist. Like, the reason why you have, just to give you a little lesson, you have serif and sans serif fonts. And a serif is the little doohickeys on something like Times New Roman, which everyone uses for essays.
Yeah.
Times New Roman, the little doohickeys that stick off. And sans serif means without them. So that's a font like Helvetica. And Arial, which is a bastardization of Helvetica by Microsoft. But and the reason why they have those is that they make your eye move better, and it was a transformation from calligraphy. And so once you start to learn the history of where these typefaces came from, you start to understand what good typography is. And it just goes through the whole process, and walks you through the grid of how you lay something out on a page and all of these things. And by the end of the book, I guarantee, even if you just type letters up in Word, they're going to look 100 times better, because you're going to understand why language is presented in the way it is. Because if you're a writer, you must realize those words that you're writing are going to be printed or presented on the web. And there's chapters on the web in this book, in letters, because your letters are language. It's the visual representation of that language. And I am a graphic designer. I work with typeface all day. And so I have this deep love of it. But this book will give you a little peek into where that comes from. Where that love comes from. So
that's really cool.
It's a great read, and the presentation and voice of this book is very light and easy to read. Tons and tons of pictures, as you would expect. And it will make you go from someone that knows nothing about graphic design, and then all of a sudden, I guarantee you, you'll never look at anything printed again the same.
That's awesome. And I just want to quickly recommend a book for you that I don't know if you've read, but it's called The Cheese Monkeys by Chip Kidd. I think I've talked about it before.
No, I Chip Kidd is a genius. Yes.
Yeah, he's a genius. So if that book it's a novel that he wrote, but it's about going to design school, and it's all about, there's typography left and right in that book.
And Chip Kidd, for those that you don't know, is a book cover designer, is what he's really known for. He did
Jurassic Park
logo. That's what I was gonna say. He did the Jurassic Park logo, so it kind of ties it into the Do Nothing But Read, one Jurassic Park reference per episode.
Exactly. It's a requirement.
Yes.
So Brandon, every episode we talk about WTF are we reading for chapter two. So WTF are you reading right now?
Well, for Christmas, I got a pile of books. I texted them to you.
Yes, that was ridiculous.
On Christmas morning. I just got so many books. I got Daily Show Earth, the book. I got Superman Earth 1 by J. Michael Straczynski, who's the guy who wrote Babylon 5.
Oh, cool.
But this is like, this book got major press because it was supposed to be an amazing Superman graphic novel. I got The World According to Twitter by David Pogue, and They Call Me Baba Booey by Gary Dale Abate from the Howard Stern Show.
That's awesome.
So I got a ton of books, so those will, I'm sure, work their way into the podcast to 2011.
Right.
2011, 2011, I don't know.
what I don't know what to call it. I don't think I've said that aloud yet.
I don't think anyone's settled on what to call it yet. But I'm currently reading, don't judge me, I'm reading a book called Halo, The Fall of Reach. And it is a book based in the Halo video game universe.
I don't judge. I say read what you want to read and enjoy it.
One of my brother's friends highly recommended it. It's actually pretty good. A lot of these, as we talked about in the Doctor Who episode, a lot of these people that write these branded video game and TV thing, they're all good writers. They just need money and to eat.
Right. Oh, that's important.
You know, so this book is actually pretty, I'm enjoying it. It's not shattering my world. It's just, as a fan of the games, I wanted a little insight
into
this particular part of the lore.
Because that's such a complicated world that they can totally do that.
Yes.
With those books. So right now I'm rereading Smoke and Mirrors by Neil Gaiman. And congrats to him and Amanda Palmer because they got married earlier this month. So hooray. I love this collection, but it has quite a few poems and poetry type things in it. And I'm not really a poetry person, and I know that the second I say that, someone's going to force me to read poetry.
Please don't. Please don't force either of us to
read poetry. I don't want to do a poetry episode. Please don't.
I've read plenty. I do read it for fun sometimes, but not often.
Sort of skip it. So, which makes me a bad person, but whatever. So I like this collection, but I'm sort of skipping the things that I don't want to read. You can't glue my eyeballs open, guys. So that's what I'm reading right now. And also my friend is giving me a whole bunch of Doctor Who novels from the 1970s that she picked up.
Oh, those are great.
Yeah. So awesome. I think I might send you a couple and then we can do an episode on them.
Yes. 70s Doctor Who.
Yeah. That'll be awesome.
Excellent. So their views of the future are really funny because their future is today.
That's weird.
Yes. Their future is now.
Oh, God.
So, book news now.
Book news.
First, Bob Dylan just signed a 6-book deal with Simon & Schuster. 6 books.
What are they going to be about? Are they going to be about him, or are they going to be fiction?
They're going to be about him and his life. Bob Dylan's a very wordy person, as you know.
Not to be a jerk, but I don't know. Does he have 6 books worth of stuff to talk about?
I think the one book is going to be completely about his radio show.
Okay.
On Sirius Satellite Radio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he has 6 books worth. I don't know if he'll get to 6 books. That takes a long time.
Are you saying that you think he's going to die before the 6 books?
Six books is incredibly. That's a credible amount of writing.
How old is he anyway? Did he just turn 70 or something?
He'll probably have a ghostwriter with him.
Yeah, or he'll be a ghostwriter.
Moving on. Apple sold 7.3 iPads last quarter, according to their stockholder call early this week. That brings the total iPads sold to 15 million.
When did they launch? Can you remind me of the date?
April of 2010.
Wow.
So you're talking about 15 million iPads in the wild. I can tell you in New York City, I see them constantly. On my bus, there was 3 today.
Oh, my God. My boss bought one, but that's the only one I've ever seen in person. But then again, I live in Wisconsin, so.
Yeah, they'll make it that way out there eventually. Yeah. you'll get them. The wagons will bring them.
The wagons with the horses.
Yes.
That's how we roll. But no, the cows. The cows pull the wagons because I was wearing
this.
I'm just going to make fun of the state I live in until I die.
Amanda, this was a big one that you wanted. I remember when it happened, you IM'd me immediately said, during our holiday break, you're like, we have to cover this.
So this happened a couple weeks ago, but I think everyone's still sort of upset about it because it's still happening.
Yeah,
but,
I'm still hearing stuff on about it.
A publisher is planning on publishing an edition of Huck Finn. It's going to be The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn in one volume. And they're removing the N-word, which I still feel uncomfortable saying. I know you've said it on the podcast before, but I feel weird about saying it.
Yeah, because you have to say it in context.
And I know, because it's in context. So you can't just say it. It's, I don't know. That's like the one word that I think is still really stigmatized. But so they're removing that word from.
Well, you have to say every word in context. You just can't say right. Beach balls.
Beach balls. Yeah. No, they're removing the word nigger, and they're also removing the word Indian and replacing it with native and or Indian. So it's going to be Native Joe instead of Indian Joe.
Did they use that word in this?
Well, they use in. It's in Tom Sawyer. Injun Joe's in Tom Sawyer.
No, but did they use native? No.
No, and they also they're also changing the N word to either slave or I think like African or something. Like, are you kidding me? Like, yeah. Not only is this blatant censorship, but it's also ignoring the fact that these words were used at the time in total normalcy. Like, prim mm-hmm. and proper ladies who wore hats all the time and, like,
yes.
who wore, like, bustles would say nigger and not feel weird about it.
Yeah, it's editing not, the past. It's not...
And at the time, I mean, right. Okay, it's a racist term now. At the time, it was not... really a racist term in the sense that it is now.
Well, it was a term used with hate, but it was a term completely in the lexicon.
Right.
That's just what those people were called. We've talked about this at length in the Huck right. Finn episode. You can see that. But the stuff that we were talking about then apparently came true.
Right. Because now this edition is going to come out with all of these words...
and all the
and different words put in, and it's not the generation of kids. I mean, hopefully this edition of this book won't make it into classrooms.
Yeah, it will in the middle of the country.
I live there.
You where you live. You know what I mean?
It will not happen in Madison, because Madison yes, people are I know, insane. But
you know, I think there's two sides of this, is because you have to look at it from both sides. That they a book that was never going to get in these classrooms
mm-hmm.
is going to get in these classrooms, and the message isn't going to be changed to the book, maybe.
Yeah, that's one side of it, and the other side of it is just that I don't know. I would almost see that's a really good point.
Like the message of understanding is going to get. To those kids. Right.
Because like, would I rather have no one read it than read it in the correct version, or would
I? Yeah, that's the catch 22.
That's hard.
Yeah. Would you have?
Now I don't know how I feel.
Would you have no one read Huck Finn and it stay as it is? Or would you rather the message of that book get out to kids?
See, I would almost rather have the kids read it in the edited version, but then maybe have something in the introduction where it's like, hey, when it says this word, it used to say that.
And might I add, too, the areas that were banning this book because of that word are the very areas that need this book.
Exactly. Yeah, that's hard. See, I didn't even think about that.
Good job. Completely against it, but...
No, so am I, but that's actually, like, a really good point.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Do Nothing But Read. For more of this show and general geekery, check out themoderndaypirates.com. And while you're there, you can find all the books mentioned in this episode, and if you buy them through those links, you'll help us out.
Have a book you wish we would read? Send your episode ideas to podcastbookclub@gmail.com.
You can subscribe to this show on iTunes, and while you're there, give us a rating. That'd be awesome. For more of Amanda's book reviews and views, go to dnbrd.org. You can follow me on Twitter and Goodreads at bbwerner.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Goodreads at epistemophilia, spelled epistemophilia. Happy reading! Textbook love in the textbook.